Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
From Variety, celebrating more than 115 years covering the business of entertainment, this is the Award Circuit Podcast. Remember that photo of a buff J.K. Simmons making the rounds on the internet?
Everybody in the universe assumed it was for Commissioner Gordon, which then, you know, I was in Zack Snyder's movie for 3 minutes wearing a trench coat the entire time. It was really just coincidental timing of me just working out like crazy and wanting to be fit.
I'm Janelle Riley. On this episode of the Variety Awards Circuit Podcast, we talk to J.K. Simmons about playing William Frawley, a.k.a. I Love Lucy's Fred Mertz, in Amazon Studios' Being the Ricardos. But first, our Awards Circuit Roundtable is back as we catch up on what we watched over the holiday and share some predictions for the Golden Globe winners and SAG Award nominations. It's all on the first 2022 edition of the Variety Awards Circuit Podcast. Stay close.
Happy 2022, everyone. New year, new us. I'm Michael Schneider from Variety, along with Clayton Davis.
Bah humbug. We can still do that, right?
Yes, of course. Heading into 2022. Yeah. Janelle Riley, it's new year. Here we go. Let's make it happen.
Hey, mele kalikimaka.
Mele kalikimaka. Hauli maka hiki ho. And Jazz Tanke.
Oh, you show off.
Hello and happy new year.
I actually got my wife for Christmas, got us all a family trip to Hawaii. We're going to go to Hawaii for the first time.
Which island?
Oh my gosh.
We're going to go to Honolulu because that was the most touristy thing to do. We've never been. So we were like, let's go somewhere.
You're not going to island hop? You're just going to one island?
Yeah, we're only doing 4 days, actually.
Oh, yeah. Then you made the right call.
Yeah.
Do you know where you're staying yet? Because talk to me before you do.
Yes, I will talk to you.
Okay.
I ask you all for some advice, you Hawaii people.
All right. We'll do a separate podcast episode, just our Hawaii picks.
So I would love that.
Look for that sometime in 2022. Well, happy new year, everyone. Question mark? But here we are, and
it's been interesting.
First off, R.I.P. Betty White. Mm. I mean, that was a sad way to end 2021.
Such a 2021 thing to do.
Right, on the way out. Yeah.
2021 was just going to 2021 it all the way to the end.
Can I also say, like, a little bit of me was like the most Betty White thing to do, because obviously the big talk was that her People magazine cover, celebrating her 100th birthday. And I said, what a Betty White thing to do if she knew she was going soon. It was like, yep, I'm the healthiest I've ever been. Just like, that was like her prank to the world on the way out, because it would be very Betty White.
Yeah. But
she just was 99.
Well, you know, and the other funny thing is, you know, Mitch Hurwitz, who's the creator of Arrested Development, who worked on Golden Girls, so knew, you know, Betty White a little bit. He's convinced that she actually fibbed her age at some point, so maybe she actually did hit 100.
She was 100. Wow.
So, which I like. I like that. I love that that would be her final act of comedy. It turns out she did hit 100.
Like, I've been 104, students.
Insert GIF of Charlie Day conspiracy theory map.
Exactly.
Here. Yeah.
This is the one conspiracy theory I will get behind. I will be a Betty White birthday truther. I'm on board for that.
That's awesome.
R.I.P. though.
Yeah.
She was the best.
Well, I want to hear about everyone's break. I want to hear about something you watched, something you binged, something you saw over break that you had some homework. What'd you watch? Jazz, let's start with you.
Well, I did, after Betty White passed away, I did go in and watch like the Golden Girls, season 1, episode 25. The finale was like brilliant. It was making its rounds on Twitter. I finished Succession, which is incredible. I hope every single one of them gets a nomination come, you know, for the SAG. And because I was not feeling the best, I decided to go in for And Just Like That. I don't know why. It was like watching a train wreck. But I was taking too much medication and laughing my pants off. I really ended up enjoying it for some strange reason. And Janelle and I were just talking about it, but Landscapers Olivia Colman is one of the best actresses out there right now.
She's amazing.
Her range this year from The Crown, The Lost Door, and Landscapers, phenomenal. So that's what I watched.
And David Thewlis is also great in Landscapers, yes. Even though when I hear his voice, all I hear is the Shame Wizard from Big Mouth.
That's great.
He told me his son actually said something like, "Dad, did you voice something called the Shame Wizard?" Like, I guess some kids at school or something had asked him about it, and David Thewlis had to explain to his young son who the Shame Wizard was.
That's great. He's got some cred with the school kids, although I still haven't shown my kids Big Mouth yet. It's just not quite there.
Maybe when they're 25.
Maybe. Janelle, what'd you watch over break?
I rewatched The Lost Daughter, which is just such a masterpiece. And I love that I've been recommending it to so many people, but there are very certain people that I just feel would really appreciate this movie. And I have been so heartened by their feedback. I got a text from a friend yesterday who said this made me believe in the power of movies again. Like, this movie makes a difference. I've said this before. I wish this movie existed, you know, when I was... I don't want to say I'm not still in my formative years, but, you know, perhaps my formative childbearing years. Mike, I would be surprised if we weren't on the same page with this. Season 4 of Cobra Kai.
Oh, yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
Okay. I don't want to give away too much because I know there are some people who haven't watched the whole season yet. It's been out like 3 days. But the Kenny character is so wonderful and adorable, and I'm torn because part of me doesn't want to watch the show because they keep doing horrible things to him, but I need to watch the show because I need to make sure that Kenny's okay.
Oh my God, they killed Kenny. My son and I are slowly going through it, so
we haven't gotten far enough yet. William Zabka is just a comedic genius, and I don't want to give anything away if you hadn't gotten there yet, but there's a couple returning guest stars that made me extremely, extremely happy.
Cobra Kai for the win.
Yes, and I finally watched Encanto.
Mmm.
Oh.
And?
Yes. And I have had We Don't Talk About Bruno stuck in my head.
A 1,000% they pushed the wrong song.
They must have not even submitted.
They didn't.
They
only submitted one. Yeah, they Dos Orgoritas.
Is a lovely song, but it doesn't even compare to Bruno or the Pressure song.
It's an emotional part of the movie. They just listen. That's why I always think you need to consult with like critics before submitting, because like it was the same thing with Barb and Star last year.
Yep.
They submitted I Love Boobies and not Edgar's Prayer.
Yep. Ridiculous. I just wonder, like, all these people working on movies, someone has to at some point express the obvious opinion.
I mean, someone maybe did, but you know.
Well, but there was an Oscar-winning movie that came out a few years ago, and I know that they were pushing one actor for it until word got out that everybody was focused on a different actor, and that actor went on to win the Oscar. Yeah. So sometimes they don't know.
Hindsight's 2020. It's so weird.
Quite a blind item there, Janelle. All right, Clayton.
Can't name names.
But we don't talk about Bruno. Such an earworm, though.
Yeah.
Like, you hear it the first time, and it's like, let it go. Like, you just cannot get it out of your system. And
It's on the pop charts, too, I think.
I think it's like number one, right? On Spotify.
Oh, my God.
What I did over a break. I was catching up a little bit with some shortlist items because the Oscar shortlist came out before we left. I rewatched, because I only watched it once, and I don't think I was paying attention all the way through. So I rewatched The First Wave, which, by the way, just makes you cry.
Yeah.
And then I've been catching up with a couple of the shorts, and I saw, I filled out my first BAFTA ballot, which was British of me. And I watched two shows, both Showtime, Dexter New Blood, which the finale's this week, and Yellowjackets.
Yellowjackets. So good.
Christina Ricci. First of all, she's like my childhood crush and still is.
She's my adulthood crush.
I know. She is giving me such Selena Kyle, Michelle Pfeiffer vibes in this show, and I am ready to move on from Jessica.
Oh. Well, great. She has Oscar Isaac to see.
It's a fair trade-off.
Christina Ricci is wonderful, but I am team Melanie Lynskey forever and ever.
My favorite thing that came up during the break was Leonardo DiCaprio has now married both wives from Heavenly Creatures, which was great.
Well, he didn't marry one of them, but they had sex.
He did.
So.
Revolutionary Road.
Oh my God, you're right. Sorry. I saw the Titanic meme and I saw somebody saying he hooked up with both the Heavenly
Just
Creatures
bad news
ladies.
For both. Yeah. Mike, what'd you watch?
So speaking of Don't Look Up, I watched Don't Look Up. I can't stop thinking about that film.
Right?
It really, like, it stays with you. And you think about it so much, and including just that powerful ending, which I guess I shouldn't spoil, but nonetheless, like, that sticks with you. The whole story sticks with you. You're right. Like, a lot of these performances, Melanie Lynskey, who, again, like, immediately watching Yellow Jackets after watching Don't Look Up, like, we're living in a Melanie Lynskey world right now.
And thank God.
So really enjoyed that. Watched Tick, Tick, Boom.
Another great one. A
lot of fun. The music was fantastic.
Okay. I'm waiting on pins and needles for his reactions after each one.
Yeah,
like,
you know, and I'm not a musical person, never lived on the East Coast, and so never really got into theater, but I really just enjoyed the portrayal by Andrew Garfield. The music was fantastic. Just the emotional beats. I enjoyed that a lot.
Good.
Are you surprised? I don't want to say controversial. I don't know if that's the right word, but people are talking about how divisive Don't Look Up is. I have actually found, in my experience, people not in the industry, it's not divisive. People love it.
Yeah,
I don't know what your all experiences have been.
I don't quite get the divisive term either. I get that some people find it that maybe it's a little too long or a little too belabored at points, but I think the overall experience, I mean, the sign of a powerful film is that it stays with you. And this is something that stayed with me. Yeah. So I think
Adam McKay movies are just by nature divisive. Like, he's just a divisive filmmaker. He doesn't appeal to the masses.
I don't remember The Big Short being divisive. I really don't, but I could be wrong.
Well, Big Short was probably his most
accessible,
populist one. Vice was definitely down the middle. But Jessica saw it and it's her favorite movie of the year.
Yeah. Everyone I know.
I watched it three times and I haven't liked a lot of McKay's serious stuff. Obviously I love Step Brothers cause I'm a good human. But, when it came to this, I was completely taken by it. And I love Cate Blanchett in it a lot. Like, she has grown on me so much since I think she had a really good year.
Yeah, her in Nightmare Alley is stunning. I hate to, do the whole industry versus, the norms.
Yeah.
But just looking at my Facebook feed, like, all my friends back in Oregon and Hawaii love Don't Look Up, and I haven't heard any of this discourse that's kind of taking place on Twitter.
I saw it through the Jersey, New York lens. It seemed pretty divided. Some people hated it. Yeah. Some people thought it was a masterpiece. Mm-hmm. That's a good place to be. I think you generate passion, you generate hatred.
I think you're right. Nobody wants to make a movie that everyone's like, it's fine.
Yeah. That everyone's like, yeah, okay, it's a movie. And we move on.
Yeah. I saw Spencer.
Oh, what did you think?
Tell us.
I would not have told Mike to watch it.
It's fine.
Okay, but didn't you think she was great? Or actually, the whole cast.
She was great, and the cinematography was fantastic.
And the costumes,
Claire Mathon,
great. I mean, it looked fantastic. It was just.
Come on, let's spare Mike from getting hated on Twitter. We're not going to do this.
No. Mike, have you seen Belfast yet?
I haven't yet. That's one that I'm waiting for the screener because it was $20 and I wasn't ready.
Jesus.
$20.
But Spencer is regular people do not like Spencer. And I knew that from a mile away. Yeah. Like, that was not going to be consumer friendly.
But I don't know anyone who has anything but raves about Kristen Stewart's performance. Yeah, even if they don't like the movie.
She's your takeaway. Yeah.
Yeah.
I find that interesting. The Brits who I know who have watched it, some in BAFTA, are like, they despise the film. They despise her. And I see where they're coming from.
Tell them to watch the Diana musical on Netflix.
Hey, that's turning into a cult classic.
I'm ready to know what the BAFTA crowd is going to do with Spencer, because I want to know if they're going to be like, nope, can't betray our whatever she is to them.
I would be shocked if Kristen Stewart wasn't nominated for BAFTA.
Oh, she's going to get nominated.
Okay.
Well, wait, not for BAFTA? I don't know, because of those new rules with the jury and stuff, she could totally miss. But I think everything else, she's fine.
Mike, did you watch Being the Ricardos, or did you miss that?
I haven't had a chance to watch that one yet.
God damn it, Michael.
Hey, I saw Spider-Man, which I think maybe we talked about before we left. But I've seen multiple films over the course of the past couple weeks. So I feel like mission accomplished.
It's like you're a film awards editor. You should apply for that job.
Now back to the TV. So next week, things are getting busy again. We've got the Golden Globes.
Are Golden Globes going to work if there's not journalists or presenters? And it's just, is someone going to be like tweeting out the winners?
I guess maybe that's what they're going to do, right?
Are nominees invited?
I mean, they're not going to turn them away if they show up and nominees are going to show up.
Get out of here, Jamie Dornan.
Yeah, sorry, Jamie.
We don't need you. Could you host while you're here?
Hang out downstairs at the bar. We'll get to you after. But it's gonna be odd. Like, they're still talking about maybe streaming it. At the time of us recording, they haven't firmed up any live stream plans or social media plans. But I'm assuming they'll be texting or posting the winners as they announce them.
I would like to see if the Hollywood Foreign Press members, who are members of the press, if they report on their show that they're in the room for.
Yeah.
At their respective outlets. But who knows?
Do they have outlets?
I was just going to say, I thought the whole issue was...
the new ones do. I know that.
It's true.
The new ones do. I can't speak for the others.
Yeah, but not all of them are going to be in the room, too. I mean, they're keeping it very small. Like, who's actually going to be
by
in the
choice,
room?
By choice, man. By active choice.
I mean, there's not going to be food or drink, so...
So wait, I need to know, Mike. Do you think it's a Ted Lasso night? Or you think it's going to be only Murders in the Building?
I'm just going to remind everyone, Hacks also premiered last year.
Yeah.
They always go with something that isn't going to win the Emmy, though. Like the Brooklyn Nine-Nines, like they usually go...
Oh, yeah,
like,
they like the newer...
They go new show. I mean, Hacks is new, so that does count. But I think it could be Reservation Dogs, for all we know.
Mm. It could. If they really want to make a statement, that I think that's a possibility, and that definitely gets them way out in front of the Emmys. So I think that's a possibility.
I see it as the great audience, kind of.
They didn't go the first time.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, I don't feel like there's... I mean, I like The Great a lot, but I don't think there's been as much conversation or heat about season two.
No.
Which is a bummer. I'm really loving it.
Yeah, they're fantastic, both of them. So, but I think if there was to be also a larger, noisier upset, then Only Murders, perhaps, because it does. I mean, it depends. Ted Lasso, of course, is the 800-pound gorilla at this point. So that could, if enough people say, well, it's still Ted Lasso, then that could win. But
Mike, a TV question for you. When the hell is Barry coming back? It's been like 80 years.
It's supposed to be this year. It was on that HBO Max preview that they showed on New Year's Day.
Yeah, spring, I guess. You know, everything needs to obviously premiere before May 31st for Emmy considerations. So
I miss Barry so much.
A lot of these things are happening in spring. It's going to be a busy spring.
I think these longer gaps, by the way, are hurting shows.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
Like significantly, like, hurting them. Like, they can't keep their audience, because I disengage from that long. Like, it's going to probably take a miracle to get my wife to watch Barry again.
Well, I think a lot of these shows, they're going to need to definitely do like some sort of recap event to remind people where things stand. And because there's a number of shows, Atlanta also coming back after several years.
Right.
And we all kind of
Stranger Things 4.
Like, exactly. We're going to need a recap on that.
They're going to be grown adults now. We're going to be like, what are you doing here, kids? Grown
Which
man.
Is why I secretly hope that they filmed a season 2 of Yellow Jackets and are just going to drop it like next month.
Well, that would be the dream.
Those are nice things that we don't deserve. So I can't speak to that.
All right, so Globes out of the way, SAG nominations next week.
Real quick. Globes, Jane Campion's going to win the Globe probably, and picture...
I have no idea what they're going to do.
Okay.
I mean, now I hadn't even thought about it until you brought it up, but I think that would...
Jane feels
that's
good.
That's probably the way
Jane,
I would lean.
Yeah.
Okay, cool. All right, then we're good. SAG. That closes Sunday, the voting.
And with nominations on Wednesday morning.
Yes, nominations are...
Announced on Wednesday morning.
So I will say that I think Coda feels good for SAG Ensemble.
I'm so glad. Yeah. I'm so glad.
Definitely. I think it's going to win. I really think it's going to win.
I think it has a really good shot.
And then I think we're going to get... I think we're going to have a big snub in supporting actress.
I think we're going to have a big snub in supporting actor.
Who's your predicted snub and supporting actor?
I don't know if I want to say because
it's not a final prediction. You could just say, who do you think is going to miss?
I'm not feeling so confident about Jamie Dornan.
He's my number five. Yeah. So that's a good feeling. You know who I'm thinking is going to miss?
Who?
Supporting actor, Kirsten Dunst.
That's my fear, yeah. but I just don't see it ultimately happening because I think Power of Dog is also getting an ensemble.
But they'll miss SAG and get Oscar, but I just think we're going to have those misses.
My concern with both those performances, which are both excellent, is that there are other what would be called quote-unquote bigger performances in the same movie that are getting a lot of talk. And I think, forgive me if I butcher this, Karen Hines is definitely getting nominated for Belfast. And I do think that, unfortunately, there's a thing where people kind of go...
I checked that already.
I
hope I'm wrong. Believe me. I'm wrong. And he's so good in the movie. And I think people want to see Jamie nominated. I'm worried.
Good theory. And then TV side, Mike, Squid Game, and one more.
Squid Game. Succession.
Succession will get its first nomination.
Succession, finally.
Its first nomination. And then,
how many individual noms are you predicting for Succession?
I have two actors, Brian and Jeremy. Oh, no, I have three. Brian, Jeremy, and Kieran. I think
Okay.
And then, TV, and then drama, TV, I have to look.
And then you must have Sarah.
Sarah Snook. I have five nominations.
This is, my God, I just blanked on his real name. Tom. What's
Matthew
wrong with me?
McFadden.
Thank you, my favorite Mr. Darcy.
Yeah.
This is Matthew McFadden's year, though, I feel, but, you know, there's just so many good actors. I think Matthew wins the Emmy, but I'm curious to see what happens at SAG.
You think Matthew... Oh, you think he wins the Emmy?
The supporting?
For supporting actor? Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Okay. I wish SAG would just do supporting categories already. This is really stupid. Like, I really... Mm. Like, it's their worst thing right now. Just do supporting.
But yeah, I think almost all of them get nominated, so...
And then two murder guys, Martin and Short, they both make it?
Yeah.
You think Selena makes it?
And then Selena, I mean, it depends how... all in they are. I mean, that's the other thing.
I think they're gonna do their obligatory Allison Janney one more time for Mom. I think they're gonna do Issa.
Didn't Mom end last year?
It did. It's eligible though.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
It's in the window. So I think they may do her. I think they're gonna do Issa because they know better. Mm-hmm. And then Hannah, I think, is in, and Jean is in, so that leaves one spot left.
And Hannah Waddingham.
Hannah Waddingham. Oh, yeah.
Both Hannahs could end up.
Both perhaps. Hannahs, and then there's Tracy Ellis Ross, so Selena's got a hard time.
Yeah.
I think Selena gets in because the voting audience is, how do I say this?
More populous.
Hipper,
yep. That's fair. That's why she has a really good shot. I don't think she gets in it. At Emmys, though. I mean, right now, depending on what it looks
like. Yeah, like that's. I think right now she has a better shot at SAG. When Emmys roll around, I'll see how I feel. But I don't know. Actors really love that show.
Yeah.
Especially. Yeah, I mean, it really speaks to them.
Yeah, because it's about an actor.
And holding your own against Steve Martin and Martin Short. Come on.
And we'll have SAG on fire with Oscar Isaac and Jessica Chastain both nominated.
For Scenes from a Marriage.
Yep.
Yeah.
Fire.
Well, it's such an actor's movie. It's such an actor's series too. Like,
yeah, that's going to be a good category drama. That miniseries actress, because that's Chastain, Jennifer Coolidge is going to be there, I'm sure.
Yeah,
for White Lotus, and Kate Winslet, and I think Beanie Feldstein's going to get in. I still think,
and Olivia Colman.
Mm-hmm.
Could be Olivia, and then always. Or go with your obligatory Nicole Kidman, Nine Perfect Strangers.
Jazz, what snub are you concerned about? Or person are you worried won't make the cut?
I think Jared. I'm on the fence with Jared. I know a lot of people have him up there a lot, but I also feel he could miss because...
He got nominated for The Little Things, though.
He did. I always go back to that, but I'm like, at the same time, it's not...
Yeah.
From that film, I think the one secure nomination, maybe, is Gaga. I just don't... Jared could miss, too.
Spoiler alert, when this comes out, I pulled Gaga from my Best Actress lineup.
Did you? Somebody else did too. I saw another big pundit push her to six.
I think, I don't know if that's a sure thing anymore.
I still think she can win.
She could. No, she totally could.
Yeah.
I mean, listen, that category is, I do not, even though Kristen Stewart is plowing right now with Critics Awards, I don't think that's preordained. And I still think Nicole Kidman could win, and that movie's getting beat up also. So
is she plowing? Because I felt like
Kristen?
Olivia Colman picked some up.
I think Olivia could. Here's the thing, I think Olivia could sneak in and just take it. I would not be upset, and I would not be surprised if Olivia just comes in and
wins. I don't disagree. I think it's a three-way race right now.
Yeah.
I haven't updated this in the last day, but Kristen Stewart has 16 wins. Alana Haim has 3. Chastain has 2. Tessa Thompson has 2.
You know, just get Alana Haim nominated and we'll go from there, because
she could win too.
She's,
I think she could do it too.
She's fantastic.
I think she's going to win Globe.
I'm trying to think who she's up against. Zegler.
Right.
Ooh, that's a tough one.
It's a tough one, but she might beat her. Nicolas Cage, 2nd in wins with 4.
Good for him.
Look at him. That's what happens when you're on a podcast with Janelle Riley. You get some nice wins.
And you make some news.
I made that.
You made that happen.
Yeah.
You mean thespian Nicolas Cage.
Thespian.
Boy, people really had a strong response to that.
Yeah, can I also say, he looks fantastic.
When I saw him in person, and I haven't seen him in person in like 10 years, I was like, he looks
really good.
Really healthy, like stylish suit. Like,
I'm like, all right, Nick Cage.
He's got that Clayton Davis beard game going.
He had a really good beard though. I'm very particular with people with beards, but I was like, all right.
It was a well groomed beard.
He's got the swagger. Yeah. Love it.
I mean, he's Nicolas Cage.
And by the way, Jane Campion, 20 wins this season. The only other director that's won more than one, and they've won 2, is Denis Villeneuve.
Wow.
Jane Campion is steamrolled.
I mean, good for her.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We'll see.
All right, gang. Well, on that note, I think we move on.
No more Michael Schneider. Michael, watch movies.
Michael, can I ask you one question?
Yes.
Do you think Squid Game gets individual acting nominations or just ensemble?
That's a good question. I think maybe one.
Mm-hmm.
Individual, but I think probably the focus will be more on ensemble. I mean, it's a crowded space. I mean, we just mentioned a ton of names, and there are a ton more names that we haven't mentioned. We were talking about Succession. We didn't mention J. Smith Cameron, who also, I mean, Jerry. I mean, it could be like a full Succession sweep, and that pushes out a lot of shows.
J. Cameron Smith is getting in.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So
did I say her name right? Is it Smith Cameron?
J. Smith Cameron, yeah.
Yeah, sorry, I knew better.
Wait, did you say Smith Cameron or Cameron? Whatever. I thought
she said Cameron Smith.
Oh, no, Smith Cameron. I, oh I my heard God. It correctly.
It's Smith
anyway.
Cameron. My bad.
It's
my bad.
Smith Cameron. You said it correctly.
Yeah.
All right. On that note,
I love you, Michael
Smith
Schneider.
Cameron, we love you.
We're Wait, here what? Too, Clayton, but that's cool.
Exactly.
I love you girls so much.
Too little, too late.
Okay.
All right. Well, we'll get to the interviews and we'll see y'all next week.
After the break, Being the Ricardos star J.K. Simmons. From Los Angeles, this is Variety's Award Circuit Podcast.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
And we're back. It's the Awards Circuit Podcast. I'm Janelle Riley. From director Aaron Sorkin, Being the Ricardos chronicles a pivotal week in the life and marriage of Lucille Ball and Desi Arnaz. J.K. Simmons plays William Frawley, who starred on I Love Lucy as neighbor Fred Mertz and was friends with both in real life. Nina Arianda rounds out the cast as Vivian Vance, who plays Fred's wife, Ethel. In real life, and as depicted in the film, Frawley and Vance couldn't really stand each other.
For the love of God, old man, this isn't hard. Rusty Hamer plays Rusty Williams on the Danny Thomas show. He's in second grade, and they made him sign a loyalty oath when he signed his contract, which I think is ugly. I don't know why this is tripping you up. It wasn't confusing.
There's no such thing as the Danny Thomas show. It's called Make Room for Daddy. Don't tell me comedy. And if little Rusty is a communist, then I'm going to beat the shit out of a seven-year-old kid. I have no problem with that.
I'm done.
When Being the Ricardos was announced, Simmons seemed like slam dunk casting, but as he points out, he doesn't really look that much like Bill Frawley. Nonetheless, Simmons recently told me that he tried to inhabit his body in a different way that channels Frawley a little bit more. Simmons also talked about working the awards gauntlet before, when he won pretty much every award possible for playing the abusive music teacher in 2014's Whiplash. He says he did his best to enjoy the time and took advantage of the platform he was given. The busy actor also touches on returning to the role of J. Jonah Jameson in Spider-Man No Way Home. I began by asking Simmons if he had ever worked with Aaron Sorkin before, as they seem a natural fit.
My first Broadway play, I was a replacement understudy in A Few Good Men.
No way. For what role?
For the doctor, who does not exist in the movie.
Oh, he doesn't?
And for the Colonel, a.k.a. the Nicholson role. And, of course, any of us who were involved in the play, you know, acknowledge that it's a very, very good film. But, of course, you know, we all think the play's the thing. And, it remains to this day maybe the best role I've ever had, a television, film, stage. It was an absolute genius piece of writing. And of course, at this point, you know, Aaron was just some kid from Scarsdale who, you know, miraculously got a play on Broadway. And by the time I joined, you know, the play was already a hit. They were already on, you know, their second, you know, pair of leads. And I was understudying Ron Perlman, who was great as the Colonel. And once I, you know, had my rehearsals with the, you know, the stage manager and the other understudies, and, you know, word was that I was going to be competent. Then Ron said, all right, well, I'm taking a long weekend and, you know, you're on, have a good time. And, as I said, I mean, one of the great roles, first of all, in the history of theater and you know, subsequently film, and quite possibly the best and I'm not Aaron Sorkin, so I'm at a loss for adjectives, but exciting, thrilling, gratifying, genius, you know, brilliant character I have had the opportunity to play.
I have seen people do the monologue by the Colonel, obviously, on many occasions. And it's always interesting because I don't know if there is a way to do it differently than the way Jack Nicholson says, you know, you can't handle the truth. Like, does it have to be yelled? Having done it before the movie became so memorable, what, you know, how did you sort of deliver that speech?
I honestly couldn't tell you, you know, I couldn't recreate anything that I did. All I know is that when I read the play and then subsequently, you know, saw it, you know, of course, you know, as the understudy many, many times. But when I read the play, I've never, and again, you know, maybe never before or since, had anything just jump off the page directly into my, you know, psyche and heart and understood every syllable of what that character was about and where he was coming from. And you know, whether you view him as, you know, 100% bad guy or not, it's such a clearly drawn character, clear, and the motivations are so clear and precise and wonderful, and you know, and as movie audiences have learned over the years, you know, there's not a syllable in Aaron's writing that isn't there for a reason, and that was just one of those cases where I actually understood every reason for all of it, and yeah, you know, so we had that. And, you know, and Aaron came, you know, he got a call, oh, this understudy's going on, some dude nobody's ever heard of. And he came and saw the play that night. And we had, you know, a wonderful time talking about it. He was very, very kind and complimentary. You know, you'd have thunk we'd managed to work together a few times over the years. But we had a lot of near misses here and there. I did do a guest spot like everybody else in town. I did a guest spot on The West Wing, but that was after Aaron had left. So this was our next opportunity to actually work together. And this time to, you know, he's Aaron Sorkin movie director now. Mm-hmm. So not just Aaron's, not, let me see. I don't want to say just. In addition to, you know, Aaron Sorkin, genius screenwriter.
So it took over 30 years for you guys to finally find something.
Yeah, 31 years, you know, and hopefully it'll not be another 3 decades because I'm going to be slightly aged by then.
You know, they're bringing back a lot of these like live performances of shows. It's mostly been musicals, but I really think they need to be doing plays. And I know Aaron Sorkin loves revisiting his old stuff and restaging it. I am all for, you're giving me this look because you know where this is going.
well, for two reasons, because A, this does not happen often. I disagree with you. I think plays belong in the theater. And I think watching, you know, a staged play or musical, you know, on any size screen is just, you know, if, not for me. You know, it's just a personal opinion, taste. But, you know, I had a 20-year career doing nothing but theater and somehow transitioned to a, you know, whatever, 20-some year career that's been exclusively screen now. Not that I do hope to go back to the theater at some point, the theater. But they're just very different animals to me. You know, I know a lot of people have really enjoyed some of the, as you were talking about, some of the live televised musicals and things. And I certainly see the appeal in that, but it just ain't for me.
I might be riding a high because I just saw West Side Story and I was so impressed with how, like, I guess it's not a secret. Go ahead.
I'm sorry. Now that's a movie musical. I mean, and there, and, you know, but you know, but to see, and I've heard wonderful things about it too. And I am excited to actually see it. And the original West Side Story, you know, obviously very much in and of its time. And we've, you know, audiences view it differently now. I try to view things in and of their time, you know, as they were. But yeah, I mean, you know, Singing in the Rain. I mean, La La Land, Chicago. You know, I love a good movie musical that is conceived as a movie musical.
But not filming something on stage.
Yeah, I'm just, I understand that. And again, personally, yes. I'm just not a big fan of that. But,
I'm not so sure I disagree with. I think you might be right about that. Now, you know, I don't know. Martin McDonagh is one of my favorite playwrights and obviously one of my favorite screen. Oh my God. So, you know, he has said he will never adapt one of his plays into a film.
No, I mean, they're And God love him. I mean, we've seen, three of his plays, I think in the before COVID, obviously, right, in the last few years and obviously seen his films as well. He gets both media, listen, I'd love to work with him in either medium. Cause I think he's very specific, to whatever medium it is that he's working in, not unlike Aaron.
That's exactly what he says. He's like, I write for one medium and that's where I want the story to exist. But yeah. I'm still working on that Pillow Man, movie adaptation, still pushing for that. Actually, not sure that is a good idea now that I think about it. So it's so funny to me because when people talked about the casting of Being the Ricardos, when they hear you're in it, they say, oh, is he playing William Frawley? And I'm like, yeah. And everyone's like, that's perfect. I mean, people love this casting right out of the gate. Had you ever been told that you resembled him or had his spirit or anything like that?
You know what? Considering that I'm a blue-eyed, bald, white guy of almost the exact right age, it's remarkable how little we look alike. You know, if you take an 8x10 of his, I mean, our faces, I mean, the nose is kind of in the middle, but I mean, otherwise, we really don't look that much alike, and our the way we carry ourselves is very different as well too. So, obviously that was part of my challenge, was to try and sort of inhabit my body in a different way that channels Bill Frawley a little bit more. But yeah, there is also that opposite side of the coin that's sort of, oh, is he playing Bill? Well, of course I am. Who else am I going to be playing? I'm not playing Vivian Vance. They're not going to not hire Javier Bardem to play Desi Arnaz and, slap a wig on me and have me, So, yeah, I mean, it was a sort of combination of kind of, I'm trying to think about how to joke about it appropriately, and I'm not coming up with a good way. So let's just say it was in many ways an intimidating kind of challenge, and only because it was Aaron. I sort of overcame my general distaste for biopics as a genre, and because Aaron obviously does very different things with what people will call a biopic, after conversations with him sort of allaying my fears and reading the script, which of course, as we all know, is sheer genius. It was a clear choice to jump on board.
I have found, and I'm trying to think of exceptions, but none are springing to mind, the only biopics that work for me aren't the ones that try to cover an entire life. They're the ones that focus on a very specific incident, like Being the Ricardos, like he did with Steve Jobs, taking these four points in Steve Jobs' life, or something like Spencer, which is out right now, which focuses on like one weekend. And I thought that what he did was genius because it is set, in this critical week in their lives, but you also have these moments to kind of see how they got there. And I'm not saying anything that anyone doesn't know, but I just think Aaron Sorkin is brilliant.
Yeah. And one of the things that, people talk, always about his intellect and his dialogue, both of which are incredible, but it's his sense of structure you know, is as important as his great ear for dialogue, and his heart is as important as his mind in his writing.
The second time I saw it, because I know you guessed it on Brooklyn Nine-Nine, I feel like you might get this. And that was one of the best guest appearances ever. There's a joke from very early in the season, or very early in the show, where Captain Holt, Andre Brower's character, says his favorite movie is Moneyball. And it cuts to him at a theater with tears streaming down his face. And he's like, the statistical analysis, it's so beautiful. And that was me the second time, because, you know, the first time I was just appreciating, I was just enjoying it. Second time, the structure of this movie is just so brilliant that I full on became Captain Holt in that theater.
Yeah, nice. Nice analogy.
The structure. Yeah. That poor person sitting next to me. I feel so bad for them. Yeah. So were you an I Love Lucy fan? Did you know much about them?
Yeah, I mean, it was, and of course, I was the closest to anybody in the cast or maybe anybody on the set. You know, I was born 3 years after our, you know, 1 week is set. But I was alive in the 50s, unlike most of the cast. And it was at my grandparents' house, my mother's parents' house, and at our house when I Love Lucy was on, the TV was on, and we were watching it. And of course, when I was, you know, a smallish kid, I didn't really get what was going on, except that it was kind of lively and fun and funny. And you know, now having done this and talking about it a bit, you know, I do look back and I was obviously, you know, an old bald guy waiting to happen, you know, even when I was a kid, because I kind of did identify with Fred Mertz.
Really? I mean, of the four, I think I would have too.
Right?
Yeah. If those are my options.
It's a very identifiable kind of a guy.
I think I was a misanthrope even as a kid. So.
Right.
I do want to talk about like, the physical transformation though, because I don't want to assume anything, but it looks like maybe you're padded, but like also the way that you walk, the way he carries himself. I know he struggled with alcoholism. There's so many little things. Where did you even begin? I mean, does it start with exterior things or interior things?
First of all, it always comes off the page, but especially with Sorkin, but this is a different animal, you know, because I am playing an actual guy. So I did feel, you know, the obligation to get, you know, not an impression, not a spot on, you know, look and sound like, you know, which Aaron kept telling us he wasn't looking for. It's a painting, he said, not a photograph. I wanted to depict the guy as well as I could. And we all have those friends who are like, oh my God, I Love Lucy is, you know, the best thing in the history of, you know, pop culture. And one of my friends, a casting director here in New York, Alan Filderman, was among the first to, you know, freak out when it was announced, you know, when it was in the trades that I was playing. And he said, you got to come over to my house and look at it. He's got, you know, 9 books about Lucille Ball and Desi Arnaz and a biography of Vivian Vance and all that. And, you know, take whatever you want. And I found through him, through Aaron, through the production, through my own research that, and it actually ended up being a kind of a good thing, kind of a freeing thing for me. There's very little about Bill Frawley in books, I didn't find anything on film of him other than I Love Lucy and his films. You know, there's no like, oh, Bill Frawley on The Tonight Show or Bill, you know, he was kind of a reluctant participant in show business in a way, not unlike myself, another way in which it's not a stretch, you know. He just showed up and did his job. And then in his case, you know, if he wasn't doing his job, you know, he was at a ball game, or at a race horse race track, or you know, a bar, and kind of kept to himself, and you know, had a brief marriage when he was a young man, and doing with his vaudeville partner, and you know, didn't have kids, so there was no or much less of an off camera legacy for the guy to find as I was researching. But to get back to maybe kind of semi answering your question, the physicality was a very big part of it, and we did do some things with look. Susan Lyle and I, the costume designer, the wonderful costume designer, went back and forth about whether to do any padding at all, because it was, you know, about a year into the pandemic, I was already a little more padded than I had been for, you know, the Tomorrow War. I've been kind of relaxing. So, but as I watched, you know, looked at photos of him and watched episodes of the show, I thought it's not, you know, he wasn't a fat guy. Mm-hmm. He wasn't really, he was just kind of a pear-shaped guy, you know?
Yeah.
And again, the way we, our physicalities are very different. But anyway, we came up with a nice version of a subtle, I think, amount of padding that wasn't like the usual sort of t-shirt stuffed with foam, you know, that was more of a you know, south of the border kind of padding, because, you know, between him carrying his weight kind of low and the high-waisted pants of the period, you know, it was a little bit of a maternity kind of a look to the way he dressed and carried himself.
Yeah, I only really noticed because I think we see him sitting down a lot of the time.
Yeah.
There's a scene near the end where you see him in a full shot for the first time. And I was like, oh my God, they got his shape.
And of course, that's one of the things that, you know, all the way through the, you know, pre-production, the shoot, you know, we got it down and refined it. And then by the time cameras were rolling, we felt like we had it. But then, yeah, I had the same experience watching the film for the first time. I was like, oh, wait a minute. It's, you know, we're into the third act before we actually, you know, get a really good shot of, you know, kind of head to toe William Frawley. So, but obviously that kind of work, that kind of physicality, how does the guy cross the room? How does the guy stand? How does he sit? And yes, it was. And actually, back to my friend Alan, he was one of the first ones. I didn't know anything about Bill Frawley off camera. I didn't know he was a drinker. I didn't know any, you know. And he said, well, you got to watch the show because his hands, you know, shook. He had difficulty, you know, stopping his hands from shaking sometimes. So if his hands aren't in his pockets or on his hips or folded in front of him, then, you know, he's holding them together. You know, you will rarely see him, you know, sort of making himself vulnerable to seeing those shaky hands. So I did find a few spots, a few little scenes for the people like my pal Alan, right, who are going to be watching the movie and going, oh, his hand shook, you know. I did find a few of those moments, and then the rest of the time, that was a part of his physicality, was that he is sort of holding, literally physically holding himself together. Mm-hmm.
I also, because like the last time I remember a photo of you going around the internet, you got really buff, I think, for Commissioner Gordon. And it's funny, if you type your name into Google, you know, the first thing that comes up is J.K. Simmons jacked.
Well, that's lovely. Right? And I love that everybody in the universe assumed it was for Commissioner Gordon, which then, you know, I was in Zack Snyder's movie for 3 minutes wearing a trench coat the entire time. It was just coincidental timing of, you know, me just, you know, working out like crazy and, you know, wanting to be fit, and my pal Aaron Williamson, you know, saying, hey, do you mind if I put this up on whatever he put it up on, Snapchat or whatever. So,
oh, that's right.
Yeah, listen,
you don't do Twitter.
I have no complaints. I have no complaints that that's the photo you see when you Google me. And now that I'm doing, you know, Commissioner Gordon again. Yeah. I'm, you know, coincidentally, purely coincidentally, again, I'm sort of, you know, trying to emerge from my COVID sloth and, you know, getting back into shape.
I always thought it was weird. Yeah. I just repeated, you know, this misinformation, but people were saying it was for Commissioner Gordon and that never made sense to me because he's not a buff guy, really.
It had nothing to do with that. I was actually, we had recently finished my wife's film, I'm Not Here, which
yes.
I still wear the cap for which I had basically become, you know, healthy still, but you know, emaciated looking. And I was just kind of getting back into the gym, kind of trying to put on some muscle again, you know, after having sort of, you know, not starved myself. I didn't do anything stupid, but I did get, you know, very, very thin for that movie. So, so that was really the main motivation of why I had the Santa Claus beard. My friend Dan's son, Zach Erickson, was credited with having invented the label for that photo, Shredded Santa.
Well, since I saw I'm Not Here, and I know that that Sebastian Stan plays the young you, I think of it as the shredded older Sebastian Stan.
Oh, there you go. Okay. All right.
One of the other things that was so much fun finally seeing this movie with a crowd was I know that there were some people who were like a little skeptical about Nicole Kidman's casting, never doubted it for a second.
Right.
It was so fun to see like people recorrect their ideas in real time.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. No. And it is a beautiful thing. You know, the times that I've sat through it and look, there was no actor who was going to, you know, be cast in that role that wasn't going to have, you know, some naysayers out there going, no way. She can't possibly play, you know? It is really fun to watch people, as you said, you know, in the moment, correct their own misperception.
You must have known being on the set and watching her and watching Javier and Nina, who I've loved since Venus and Furs. You must have known that people were going to eat their words.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. to the extent that I knew anything about those words, because again, as you know, I'm utterly clueless about show business, other than, you know, what I'm doing in a given day. I knew at the read through on the roof of the parking structure, obviously the focus is going to be on, on Nicole and Javier mostly, and then Nina and myself, but this whole cast, I mean, I'm just going to openly campaign right now, maybe for the first time ever. If there's an award for ensemble cast, you know, we need to be considered because, you know, down to the people with one line in the movie and certainly including, you know, Tony Hale and Alia and Jake and it's a brilliantly cast movie.
There are ensemble awards at the SAG Awards and at the Critics' Choice Awards.
Right.
Yes, I was actually. Well, I'm sure you've been nominated for one at least for Up in the Air.
I've been part of films and actually when I did the closer all those years we were a bridesmaid almost every year in that category.
Well, blame The Office. Well, I guess you guys were in different categories. That's a comedy, but I remember like a certain cast of another comedy just being like, can't The Office go on?
Yeah, right.
The air?
Yeah. Come on.
We've got to win one of these.
I mean, it's so interesting in this case because you do think of it obviously as such a star vehicle and rightly so for both Nicole and Javier, but it's just a really, really great ensemble.
Speaking of openly campaigning, I'm curious because I mean, I often joke that you won so many awards for Whiplash that they had to make up new ones to just give you because it was just such a nonstop train throughout that season. Looking back now, what was that like? Was it overwhelming? Did you enjoy it? Was it, you know, maybe both?
Well, it was kind of both. And because I'd mostly because nobody really cared, and also because I didn't, you know, I never sort of worked on thrusting myself into that, you know, arena in the past. It was a unique experience for me. It was a first for me, really, other than showing up at the SAG Awards every year to not get an ensemble award. But the people that I, you know, have known, some that I've known for years and some that I met during that process, you know, everyone, you know, just kept telling me, dude, there's almost not an award out there that you're not going to get this year. I mean, clearly it's an avalanche, a tsunami. It's your turn, you know, they're all going to come your way. So I just kind of enjoyed the ride. And once I established with the studio that I just wanted to include, Michelle and the kids as much as possible in all of the, you know, travels and the red carpets and this and that. And we were, able to, you know, to some extent, you know, make it kind of a family thing as well. It was absolutely trying to think of where is Aaron Sorkin?
Get that Sorkin thesaurus.
The adjectives. Come on. A positive, obviously, experience and one that I was able to use because I did end up having so many opportunities to be up at a podium holding a trophy and giving a speech, you know, I got to say different things, that were important to me to say, like at the SAG Awards, for example, you know, and I never did write any of these speeches down. Really? I just kind of came up with general ideas and improvised, which sometimes worked well, sometimes much less so. As I recall, my speech at the BAFTAs was just stammering and stuttering and stupidity, which was like, oh, here I am, the idiot American up here, you know, completely inarticulate and, you know, unaware of, are incapable of speaking the language. But at the SAG Awards, I kind of went on and on about how, hey, supporting actor, of course, supporting actor, we're all supporting actors. You know, we're all there to support each other. We're all there to support the playwright or the screenwriter we're there to support the film and, you know, blah, blah, blah. And then, you know, more famously, of course, at the Oscars, you know, that being the sort of culmination of the whole thing, then that was the culmination of what I wanted to talk about, which was what's most important in life, which is family.
Mm-hmm. I do remember calling my mom after the Oscars.
Thank you.
And being like, well, he says I have to call. So I'm not going to disagree. I always love, for some reason, to tell the story when people talk about, you know, being a fan of yours or loving your work, that the first time I ever interviewed you, for I believe the first time you ever put on the cover of a magazine of Backstage West, you couldn't find the Four Seasons, which is like the mecca of interviews and roundtables and Hollywood.
Yeah.
And look how far you've come.
Well, I probably still would have to put it in my nav system, but it's not like I hang out there, but
but you've probably been quite
I've been,
a few
yeah,
times
I've been,
now.
I've been, I've
yeah.
Been.
And in your defense, it's a weird street where it suddenly goes from south to north. So but I just remember going like, this is so cool. He's so not Hollywood. He doesn't know where the Four Seasons is.
Well, of course, these days when we go there, somebody's usually driving. Somebody who actually knows what they're doing is usually driving. So
that's the other thing. You drove yourself. How cool is that? So I have to ask, because you do have this other movie coming out this year, and I know you can't talk about anything related to Spider-Man, even though I believe this will air after the movies come out. So if you do want to tell us everything that happens, that's fine. But it's so rare when you cameoed in Far From Home and came back as J. Jonah Jameson. I was trying to think of that, like, has ever been done where like a cast has changed, but they brought back, you know, an actor from not even like the last reboot, but the reboot before that.
Right.
How did they
It wasn't even a reboot.
it was the boot. How did they approach you about that? I mean, did you ever think you would be have to put on that mustache again?
No, it was a complete surprise, and it was very short notice. I think for that first one, I think it was almost an afterthought on the part of the studio and or John and you know whoever because the film was done, and I got a call from my wonderful agent Stephen Hirsch saying, hey, they want to talk to you about reviving your JJJ. And I went, I would love to have that conversation. And, you know, the next day there were, you know, five or so of us sitting at a table and, you know, somewhere on the Sony lot. And the next week we were shooting those, you know, quick little scenes and in literally in somebody's office, on the lot. And, the only discussion was, you know, what about the, you know, the hair and the mustache and the cigar and this and that and the other thing. And you know, I think they were more interested in an evolution of the character. I was more interested in recreating, you know, being essentially the same guy. And, you know, we found that happy medium and, you know, yeah, so here I am back as the good old JJJ.
I, you know, obviously haven't seen the new movies, but it does feel like in that last clip in Far From Home, he may have gone in like a more, I don't want to say Fox News direction, but a more sensationalistic direction.
Well, it's just, it's only because media has evolved so much. Yes. I mean, that's absolutely who this guy always was. It was just, you know, before it was, you know, the ridiculous headlines or the sort of I'm not going to make any direct comparisons, but you know, I mean, before, you know, in the comic books and in the Sam Raimi movies, it was about a newspaper and now it's about a different medium. So really that to me is the only, the difference. And it's, you know, of course the guy is going to take advantage of, how's he going to get his message to the most people? Well, you know, it ain't in a printed newspaper anymore. Mm-hmm. So.
I think it's great that he's changed with the times.
Yeah. Sense. Imagine how much less time it takes him to get ready in the morning. He's not putting on that toupee every day.
That's J.K. Simmons, star of Being the Ricardos, now streaming on Amazon Prime Video. And that's it for this edition of Variety's Award Circuit Podcast. Drew Griffith edited this episode, and Michael Schneider is the producer. Be sure to subscribe to the Award Circuit Podcast on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, or wherever you download podcasts. Also, head over to Variety.com and click on the Award Circuit tab to find the latest Oscar predictions and key races, as well as your daily fix of news, analysis, and reviews. For Jazz Tankay, Clayton Davis, and Michael Schneider, I'm Janelle Riley. We'll see you on the circuit.
Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino. That's right. Chumbacasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.